This week, on a special episode of WebMD's Health Discovered podcast, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
When I first heard the words, "you have lung cancer," I was in shock.
It's a diagnosis that changes everything. So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Introducing Home Care Plus, a new subscription service from Lowe's that helps make life easier by giving members a hand with home maintenance. Let Lowe's tackle the tasks you keep meaning to do, like electric dryer vent cleaning, replacing hard-to-reach light bulbs, and more. Subscribe to Home Care Plus for just $99 a year and consider your to-do list done. Members get more at Lowe's. Available in select zip codes only. Cancel anytime. Non-refundable fee. Product purchase required. Terms and service restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome to part two of our conversation with Todd Vonder of Detroit Paranormal about the haunted Eloise Asylum. As it was sitting empty early on, and it was very much a, you know, nobody can go in these buildings, they're just going to sit here. Do you remember specifically what were some of the stories that were going around in detail beyond just, oh, unexplained knocks or I saw somebody in the window? Any specific accounts that come to mind that you have heard about the facility over the years and when it was vacant?
Well, I had my first paranormal experience in 1987. I was in high school. I was a junior in high school. We used to sneak into Eloise, and there was probably 40 buildings still up at that point. They didn't tear the majority of them down. We'd park across the street, walk in, we'd go in the tunnels. There's a vast tunnel system that connected all the buildings that would open up into a temporary morgue in the middle of the complex. Huge, huge underground facility. So we went to one of the big buildings. It was around 400,000 square feet. It was the J building. Girl I was dating at the time and I broke up. There's about five or six of us. And it was, again, you have that. I've always loved that feeling of fear for some reason. I can't, it's like a rush to me, even back when I was younger. So we went to the basement of this building and there was files and files and file, patient files, boxes of them everywhere from the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. So we're looking through the files. I hear a male voice say, "What are you doing? You have to get out of here." And so I turned real quick, and then my girlfriend at the time said, "Who was that?" I said, "I don't know. I'm just glad someone else heard it." But at that moment, I knew that it wasn't someone there. Mm-hmm. It was a voice, but it wasn't a human, like, in this time voice. So we went around looking and calling out to everybody, and there was no response. We ended up finding the other small group of people were on completely the other side of the building. Not even close to us. And there was nobody in that basement with us. So I didn't say anything because that was 1987. My dad was a police officer. I kind of kept it to myself and my girlfriend, told the group of people because, again, there was no one to say, "Hey, I think I heard a ghost." And I felt, it felt odd. It was odd. The energy was different when that happened. And we kind of ran out of there. We didn't really linger around too long. I ran, got everybody else. We searched and we didn't find anybody. But that always stuck with me. And I never really pursued the paranormal until I got older, where I finally said, "I don't care what people really think about me. I'm just going to do what I want to do." Because it was always kind of taboo, I guess, in my household and growing up. I went to Catholic grade school and high school. You're taught ghosts don't exist. The boogeyman doesn't exist. So I think a lot of the stuff that people have the negative connotation about the paranormal is from it's a learned behavior. You know, you're taught this stuff doesn't exist. I guess once you finally open yourself up to it, you notice a lot more things happening. But that was my experience at Eloise that I'll never forget that kind of propelled me to do what I do now.
Sure. Obviously very intriguing and you know, haunting to have that moment in such a building.
Oh, it scared me.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, it scared me. But I wanna do it again. That's the weird thing about me. It scared the crap out of me, but I was like, I wanna feel that and do that again. I wanna hear that again. And what was that? Who was that? You know what I mean? You're so inquisitive. And even now at my age now, I still am inquisitive when those things happen. And it's just, it's unexplainable. People say, why do you do what you do? And I'm like, until you actually see and feel and hear some of the stuff I've done over the years, you change your mind about a lot of things.
Sure. As you got older and then you had more opportunities and you began to get into this beyond just teenage curiosity and let's go into the big abandoned building, and you actually did start to do investigating and such, what were some of, and I want to hear about your specific stories too, but what were some of the other stories that you were hearing from other investigators, whether they were going in there the correct way by getting permission or not? What were some of the stories that were coming out specifically about experiences that people were having there?
Well, there was a group that broke in there, oh God, in the mid 90s. And this is kind of still unique too, because there wasn't a lot of paranormal teams really back then. They were from Chicago and they came to Detroit and they had broken into the building and they had an old, I mean, the digital recorders now are obviously really small, but they had a bigger digital recorder. And they're just doing an EVP session and asking some questions. And they got some responses of a woman saying, help me, get me out of here, screaming, like wailing type screaming. And that kind of blew me away, too, when I saw that and listened to that. And I was like, this place has so much energy in it. But you can, when you pull up to it, it's kind of intimidating to see this huge, huge structure. Even back when I was a kid, to pull up to those buildings, it's words can't really describe how it was huge. And you're like looking at these huge, massive stone ornate structures. And you just think like it housed thousands and thousands of people in this place. A lot with severe mental illness and some would have to be put in there because they're alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, until someone, you actually go there yourself or go to asylum, you know, if there's still a few left, Waverly Hills in Kentucky, I think the sanitarium is still open, and Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in West Virginia. There's not that many left that you can actually go to and kind of explore and get your feet wet in the paranormal, which is sad, but Traverse City is not into the paranormal whatsoever.
No.
but it's a beautiful place. You know, it's coming along nicely.
It is coming along. It's coming along wonderfully. I know they're not very much into it. We have several listeners up in that area that, and I could be incorrect on this because I've never seen the documentation of it. But I believe that they were starting to do a couple nighttime tours or something of that nature. Again, I could be wrong, but it wasn't heavily ghost focused, if at all. But I'm hoping maybe they're starting to realize this could be beneficial to you as well. But I also understand many people now call that home too. There are there's apartments in several of the buildings, and to have people constantly traipsing around going ghost hunting in your house or your neighborhood, it can be a little unsettling, and I believe most of it is senior living. So,
when you think about it, it takes a different type of person when I move into. I mean, when you move in there, you know it used to be a former asylum.
Yeah.
So you have to have that drive to want to live in a place like that. I'd love to live in a place like that. I actually met a lady a few weeks ago. She had a condominium there, and she said she would hear stuff and feel stuff there. She would feel. On beautiful sunny days, she would feel like an overwhelming happiness in her condo. And she said when it was rainy or dark, she could feel the energy change, you know, but she still loved it. I mean, they're really upscale. They're not cheap. I think they're over $150,000 a condo. I don't know how they knocked the walls out in those rooms to make them huge, but I've actually reached out to the owner. I've talked to him quite a few times, said, can we come up and do some paranormal stuff? And he doesn't believe in it at all. And he doesn't want a big circus up there either.
Yeah.
That's what he thinks would happen. And sometimes it does happen when we go to places, people show up just to see what we're going to do. But
Sure. And that's not, I get where they're coming from. I'm wondering if maybe in time that will change as generations of who the seniors are that are living their shifts.
Right.
and people right. are a little more, open and interested in the topic. I don't have a ton of stories out of the place, quite honestly. I have a handful, but it's like any place like that, you almost just by default are going to get a weird feeling. I think more so sometimes just because of the Goliath structures that you're walking around and the ornate architecture and the detail and just feeling the energy of who was there, thinking these thoughts of who was there and what happened here.
Right.
Exactly. Without even having to have a ghost story to it. Tell me what it was like for you the first time, not really the first time, but the first time as an adult when you went into this place, into the Eloise Asylum. As an investigator, what was going through your mind? What were you feeling as you began an investigation there?
You know what? Jeff Atkins and I started Detroit Paranormal Expeditions back in 2016, December. And we were speaking at a paranormal conference in Indiana. And a gentleman from Detroit was there. And he came up to watch us speak. And then he talked to him after. And he goes, a friend of mine just bought Eloise. Do you guys want to get in there? And, you know, Eloise was off limits forever. I mean, I've tried every legal route to get in that place for years. And it was just off limits. So I kind of blew the guy. I go, yeah, right. You know, mm-hmm. whatever. Get a hold of me. So 2 weeks later, he messaged me, and I ended up becoming friends with him. He's a really good guy, actually. And he goes, do you guys want to go to Eloise? And again, I blew him off. I'm like, sure. Yeah, let me know when. And I didn't hear from him again. So around August 1st of 2018, he got a hold of me. He goes, give me a date, and I can get you an Eloise. I'm like, okay. His name is Russ Robinson. I said, Russ, here's a date. It was like August 30th, I think we ended up going. And I still at that point didn't think we were going to be allowed to go there. So he said, all right, we'll meet you there at 8 o'clock on August 30th. The owner's going to come and show you guys around, then you can investigate the place. I'm like, okay. So we show up, and I'm still leery, thinking that this guy's not going to show up. Sure enough, he does. So we get access to the building, walk through, and I'm like, it sounds stupid because I'm a grown man, but I was like shaking. I was so excited. And it's hard to explain to people, like, you were excited about going into an abandoned asylum? I'm like, yeah, I really was. So we walk through. And at that point, we did a Facebook Live walkthrough kind of show because it's been off limits and everyone's fascinated with it. And so we did a Facebook Live. We ended up getting like 35,000 people watch the Facebook Live that day, just of a simple walkthrough of the building. And even in the walkthrough, we got disembodied voices. And people that watched it picked it out for us. We went back and listened to it. And there was one woman said, what is that? It was a cell phone. We're using our cell phone to do a Facebook Live. And you could hear a voice say, what is that? What's that? What is that? Three separate times. And we theorized that she was asking, what do we have in our hand? She might not know what a cell phone is or a camera like that, you know, that technology. And this is the first time any team's ever been there to investigate. So, and I think when we go to a lot of places that have never been investigated, I think the energy is ramped up, or they've been wanting to talk possibly. And now we're giving them that voice. We're giving them that opportunity. And sometimes that, especially that night, that activity was so... it was so ramped up. It was so energetic. I actually kind of ran out of the building by the end of the night. We investigated. We got a lot of good stuff. We have it on our website, some of the clips. But we're kind of wrapping up. It was like 6-7 hours, about 2 o'clock in the morning. So I get on my phone. There's about 4 or 5 of us on the third floor. Get on my phone, start Facebooking, just catching up on Facebook. And I'm just get lost in my phone. Sometimes it happens. I look up, everyone's gone. So I decide to go over to, we had our static camera set up in a monitor. We're in four cameras on the third floor at that time. And so I'm just looking at the cameras, hanging out by myself in this building, which I never thought I would, because I still get kind of creeped out going in there by myself. I hear something behind me that it's to kind of describe this, the asylum, the D building is set up in wards. They're huge, huge open rooms that would have bed after bed after bed. So there'd probably be 40 beds in each ward side of the room. Third floor had two wards. So you'd have roughly 80 to 100 patients per floor. And there was no partitions. It was just a bed. And you see old pictures like that, from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, even the 60s, where it'd just be rows of beds in these type of buildings. So I hear something in the back of the ward, like footsteps and something moving. And I take my flashlight, pitch black in there, and we have the cameras, so you can see me doing this on the camera. I say hello, and you hear the audio of me saying hello, and I look underneath, shine my light in the back, there's nothing. And I said hello again, it stopped. So at that point, I'm thinking, you know what, those guys snuck out, came back, and they're trying to scare me. I thought Jeff and the rest of the team were trying to scare me. So it stopped. I didn't hear anything else. So I look at the monitors again, but it gets louder. And I could actually feel like a presence coming towards me. And it's footsteps, and it's shuffling, like shuffling feet, and it's loud. And I'm the only one in this building. I didn't realize I was the only one in the building at this time. So I say hello, and I shine the light again. And I said, you know what? And you can hear me say, I'm getting out of here. It freaked me out. So I leave. I go out the building. I go outside. And there's no power in this building, so there's no elevator. So I'm on the third floor. It seemed like it takes eons to get out because I wanted to get out so bad because I was shook up. And I go outside. Everyone's outside. You guys got to come up here. There's something up on this floor. I don't know what it is. It's moving and walking. But when we left, we had the audio running. So for a good 5 minutes, you hear feet dragging, shuffling. You hear filing cabinets opening and closing. Right where I was at, there was a patient shower area. You can hear the shower curtains going back and forth. And, you know, as paranormal evidence, a lot of it's subtle, where you have to go back and listen to it over and over. And like, what did they say? Did I hear that? This is not subtle. This is very loud, very clear. And it lasts for a solid 5 minutes. And then finally, I convince people to come back up, and it shows us walking back in, and it stops. Nothing. Goes totally quiet. And that was my greatest experience to date at Eloise, that there was something in the room with me that, and then people always go, well, you're a paranormal investigator. Why did you chicken out? I'm like, I still am human. It was like a fight or flight instinct. Like, I wanted to stay there and see what it was, but my body was telling me to go, like, get out of there. So that's what I did. But we were very lucky to capture at least some of the video, and there's nothing. It shows me doing that, shining the flashlight. Moving around, there's nothing on the cameras at all. You see nothing. But the audio, you can hear things moving, doors closing, all that stuff happening, and there's nothing there. There's nothing.
No. That would be a extremely troubling, I think, just to know that this is obviously something. You found what you were looking for when you went in to that building. With this building, the one of these buildings being converted into a hotel and a couple of the other buildings still standing, it's really kind of just a hope for the future or an opinion-based question, but where do you see the Eloise Asylum and what remains of it 20, 30 years from now?
I hope that it's the developer's plan can come to fruition. I hope that it can turn into a hotel because it is a Michigan historical landmark. Whether you agree with what happened there or you're just into historical preservation, I hope that it can stay. And I hope that it can thrive in that area because there's still so much to explore in that area. The tunnels are still there, and we're just kind of scratching the surface paranormal-wise of things that happened there. We've got photos of shadow figures and video of people on the team getting their shirts pulled. It just, something happens all the time. I can't explain it. I don't know if they're used to us now. They like us coming there and they want to talk to us and mess with us. But as a paranormal investigator, I love it for that reason. But as a historical person, I just want to see this stay. It's such a beautiful building. And I think it has so much to offer to future generations. It could be a learning, you know, Eloise can always be brought up and talk about what happened in the past and how much it's changed, how much healthcare has changed for the better for people. I just think it's a symbol, good or bad, that I think should still stay in society and stay relevant.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Todd Vonner of Detroit Paranormal about the haunted Eloise Asylum. Thank you for supporting the program and keeping us on the air. Without your support, we would not exist. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.